Welcome to the Better Questions podcast, where we wrestle with hard questions and seek to ask better ones. I'm very much looking forward to today's episode. Today I have with me my dad, Dean Jaderston, joining us for the podcast. Hi, Dad.
Hello.
Glad to have you. Why don't you just take a quick second to share a little bit outside of, you know, being my dad and all of that. Tell me a little bit, even though I know, tell it for our listeners' sake. Tell us a little bit about kind of what brought you to your current job. You're the head women's basketball coach at Friends University, but you've been a few different places. Where did you start and kind of how did you end up here?
Yeah, I started out actually while I was in college. I was a youth pastor. I was wrestling with where did I feel God really calling me or what direction I wanted to go. Got a job teaching and coaching and really fell in love with that. Always saw it as both a career, as a vocation, and as ministry. And if you look at our lives and both Julie and I, there is this constant interspersing of what we do for a job and ministry. Yeah. So served at two or three different churches as youth pastor during that this whole journey. We've directed either senior high programs or the entire camp at Northern Pines, a Christian Family Conference. And at the same time, I progressed to the coaching ranks. So I was a girls' high school basketball coach and high school teacher, and then a boys' high school basketball, and then a college men's coach at Trinity International University in Chicago for 5 years, and then a men's coach at Sterling College. And then the opportunity came to come to Friends, where we're in Wichita with you and Mike and all our grandkids, and a new challenge here kind of at this stage of my life. So we're coaching, we're having a lot of fun, and now we have a big backyard where the grandkids run around.
You had quite the end of your season. The made it to Hartman Arena for the KCAC championship. How did you? I saw that you just had your banquet. Was that a good time with the team?
Yeah, it was a blast. When we came 4 years ago, there were six kids in the program, and it was a lot of stuff. These were the kids that came in as freshmen that year, and so to have them come all the way through, to have them be playing their very best basketball at the end of the season was a lot of fun. And so we just we believe in feasting and celebrating, taking those accomplishments and making a big deal out of it. So
yeah, it was a great end of the season. Tough loss at the end, but I mean, the fact that you had two mega upsets and on, you know, enemy turf is no small thing. That was a great finish. Well, good. I'm grateful for this time. One of the reasons I wanted to do this with you is because the idea, the genesis of this podcast came to me thinking about what are the things, as I wrapped up my season doing youth ministry at Eastminster, I thought, where was I at my best as a youth pastor? And there was a tradition that we started here that I stole from you at Northern Pines, which, by the way, you're a men's basketball coach or women's basketball coach, but you're also an executive director of Northern Pines. You had mentioned that you're sort of bivocational. It's another full-time job in a way.
Yep.
I know mom does much of that when you're not at camp. But for a long time, you did the senior high program at Northern Pines. And one of the things you started was something called late night, where towards the end of the week, everyone was already dog tired, but we would gather in a room with Bibles and we would just ask questions until 4 a.m. And those were some of my favorite times at camp. And I just remember you were so good at navigating some of the most difficult questions, but you did it in a way, and this is what I learned from watching you do it, you always brought it back to the scriptures, but you also ministered to the question underneath the question, or maybe the hurt behind the question.
Thank you.
And it was watching that. Sometimes you'd hear a question, whether it was, well, why does God allow someone to be abused, or whatever the question might be, and you were able to sort of discern maybe where that question was coming from. And so I always saw late night in my time in youth ministry as an opportunity to minister. Mm-hmm. And we'd get questions that were very personal, where you could sense there was pain in the question. And I thought, that was me at my best at 4 a.m. asking, you know, talking about sexuality, talking about Calvinism, you know, trying to wrestle through predestination. You've had all the questions. And I thought, how do I still do that in a way. And so that's how this podcast was born. And so we're going to treat this like a, like we're taking a time machine back to what was the cabin at Northern Pines, Meyer, that where high school was.
Yep. Meyer. So
we're back in Meyer Lodge doing late night. Got a lot of good questions here.
Okay.
This first question is from Megan. Her question is this: with the dangers of public school, and she put in parentheses, an example being drag queen story hour and LGBTQ teachings, how can we justify sending our kids to public school? If we can't afford private school, is homeschooling the only option? I thought this was an appropriate question to throw at you, especially because you taught in public school.
Yep.
You also sent me to public school.
Yep.
And my brothers. And we too, I was talking with Betsy, we had these conversations and we are choosing at the moment to send our kids to public school, but we have, you know, seriously some serious considerations in this question. So give me some of your initial thoughts on it.
Yeah. And again, having been a public school teacher, I had to navigate those same things. One of my beliefs is the situations or topics may change, but things don't change.
Yeah.
If you were teaching back in the 60s and you had all of the uprising and unrest, it's really no different than what we see now. It's just people dress different and their social media. You can go back 50 years, 100 years. I believe, you know, the writer of Ecclesiastes says there's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah.
And so I do believe the challenges are different today, but yet the same.
Mm-hmm.
And the question for us is different, but yet the same. I will preface it. My brothers went to private school because the school district where they were at was not a good school district. I went to public school. I had a really good school. Had a lot of freedom there. At camp, we have people we love who homeschool, people we love who send their kids to private school, and people who send their kids to public school. And one of the things I would say is parents are responsible for their kids.
Yeah.
And each situation is different. And so while there are some principles that I think you have to consider, you also cannot judge somebody because of the situation that they're in. And
sure.
You know, you talk about these things. The older I get, more I realize how messy life and faith is.
Mm-hmm.
We want real clean cookie cutter answers that fit to everybody, and it doesn't work that way. So that's the whole preface.
Yeah.
One of the things that I talk to parents about when they ask us a camp.
Yep.
For you and Mike and Jake, we believe strongly God gave us our sons, but we were supposed to give them back to him.
Mm.
He was in control. He was the one who was going to take care of them. He was the one who was going to provide for them. In our strength and power and resources, we couldn't do the same thing. That meant where we go, we have to trust God that you're going to be in a place where he is providing and taking care of. So if you look at the different schools you went to in Minnesota, you were in a pretty affluent suburban school, a really nice school district, a really good school district. You went to Chicago and all of a sudden you're in a very diverse.
I remember it was a culture shock because in middle school, there were colors you weren't allowed to wear because they represented the Latino Kings gang. There was another gang you couldn't wear for the Crips. You couldn't wear black and red. Like there were, these are like, I hear about this in the movies, but to see it. And then I remember freshman year at Warren, I got the news to our class that one of our kids was shot in a drive-by.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, he just wasn't there the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is such a different culture, and yet I would say my education at Warren was excellent.
Yes,
but even still, it was definitely different.
It was a completely new world. You stay in your own little group. You don't make eye contact.
Yep.
the talent levels in every team and sport sure. is much higher. And so there is that experience. Then we go to Sterling, which has 75 kids in the high school and yeah. share lockers. And so you had this opportunity to go to these different schools where each was different, but our belief was in those schools, you had an opportunity to be salt and light.
Yeah.
One of my big concerns is if all of our believers pull kids out of our schools because of stuff that's not good that's happening.
Sure.
Where does the salt and light come from?
Right.
And, you know, when we moved to Sterling, one of the things that I still think is amazing is trying to get acclimated. You guys started that garage band.
Yeah.
And it was loud and
made the neighbors a little bit
yes.
uncomfortable.
But if you think about the people in that band mm-hmm. who were not believers, but they were around you and Mike and yep. Jake and where they are at now, mm-hmm. I think that was a formative piece for them. And they saw something, they saw salt sure. and light that eventually they were attracted to and came back to. And so in this question, there's another one that is really odd to me, and I see this a lot. I see parents who homeschool their kids or send them to private school, and then they send them off to KU or sure. K-State or some secular university because right. they want to get this degree. And it seems to me that sometimes that's flipped. I knew you were going to be presented with challenges in high school and junior high. You were going to have teachers who were maybe even anti-Christian or taught things.
Sure.
But you were always coming home to mom and I.
Yeah.
We always had that chance to have those conversations and to follow up. And so there was going to be a counter to that.
Yeah.
Which I thought would then prepare you for college. You ended up going to a Christian college, but I always felt that even if you'd gone to a secular school, you were prepared
yep.
because we had that formative time with you. And yeah. one of the things in this question that really concerns me is I see a lot of parents who are concerned about what's going on in school. So they homeschool or they sure. pull their kids, and those kids are not prepared for what they're going to face when they go off yep. to college someday. And so that's the big question that I would say you always ask, what's the question underneath? I believe in life, our job is to prepare our kids to be healthy adults who follow Jesus.
Yeah.
And so what do we let you go through? What do we let you experience? Mm-hmm. I think of a band director you had and some yeah. challenges you had with him. I think of some coaches you guys had. And why that wasn't always fun, why sometimes that was hard, those all formed you. Sure. And on the other side of those hard things, you grew and became strong. And God used those things in your lives in ways that we could never have imagined.
Yeah, I think about that a lot. I think about, even in the question, they reference two things, a drag queen story hour and LGBTQ teaching. And I know very well. I have a friend, you know, Zach in Colorado Springs, Fort Collins, is a far more left-leaning community. Mm-hmm. And he has concerns about some of the curriculum they're teaching. I know that's a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much I think the drag queen story is sort of this a false flag. It's almost fear-mongering in a sense, because I don't know how often a young person is engaged with that unless their parents bring them to that.
Yep.
But that's not to dismiss the question. I think it's a fair question. I do think that there is a lot of fear, but my question would be, don't you think these type of teaching is happening far more in other spaces, whether that's in the movies and TV shows we watch, commercials you see during the Super Bowl, and just about every sort of social media and space where we're consuming. I think about what happened during some of the racial tensions in the last few years, it was, and this is, I'm not making a statement on that at all. More so like everybody's social media profile went black, or during Pride Month, things, you see a lot of rainbows and all kinds of things. Like there is a world that is shifting in our country, that the moral majority is swinging, which happens in over time.
Yep.
And to say that the schools is the most dangerous place, or we should pull them out of there, I think actually what is taught in the home, what is able to not be afraid of what they're going to hear regardless, like you said, when they go off to college. I think there's a great quote in The Coddling of the American Mind, Jonathan Haidt's book. He says, prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that we don't want to be the 10 years ago, it was the helicopter parents, and they're now calling them the snowplow parents.
Yep.
Because they want to make life easy for their kids.
Yep.
They want to remove all danger. They want to, the phrase they use all the time is be careful, be careful. Whereas sometimes a danger can be, I think, good for the forming of a kid's mind. And I don't know.
Well, we sometimes, you know, and we have three sons who are adults, and we're proud, and we're happy. You bring a lot of joy. You love Jesus. You're doing ministry. You love your wives. You're good dads. So it's fun for mom and I. People ask us, you know, what did you do? I don't know what we did. I do know there's three things I always say we tried to teach our kids: respect your mom, don't lie, and don't be afraid.
Yeah,
don't be afraid. Be fearless. And I think of, you know, you guys going off on mission trips, mm-hmm. wherever you going on backpacking trips, you know, here we go. We're just gonna load up and go. And there were things that your mom and I cringed, but you were being fearless, and we loved that about you. We if you ask my basketball players, what's the most common commandment in the Bible? Every one of them will tell you, do not be afraid, do not be feared. Mm-hmm. And so how do we raise fearless kids? How do we raise fearless adults? And a lot of that comes back to trust. I remember your Uncle David talking about when he was raising Aaron and Ben in Amsterdam, and they're living next to the red light district, and there's syringes on the ground and stuff. And yet his belief was, if that's where God called him to be, that was the best and safest place for his sons to be.
Yeah.
And so that's I think one of the things, as you look at this question, if you want to get to the question behind the question, how do we raise our kids to be fearless? How do we be fearless parents? We can't live in fear of what the school is doing.
Sure.
Because God is still in control. We can't be in fear of what's happening. And now we have to take stands. We have to be active, but we don't have to be fearful.
Sure. You mentioned Aaron, or Aaron and Ben and David. Aaron was in town, passing through for their spring break vacation, and I got to chat with him just for like 30 minutes. He told a story that I thought was really interesting. He sat on a school board, not a school board. It was like some sort of school panel. And he was one of the only conservative voices at this conversation. And they were talking about safe spaces and basically a lot of identity politics and things like that. And so Aaron gets up and he starts to speak. And he said it was the most interesting thing. He thought he was going to get like taken out of there with a pitchfork, because he started to talk about how, you know, we need to prepare our kids for hard things. And we need them to be able to go through hard things. And he said he was talking about basically speaking exactly opposite of what they were saying, but doing it in a way that was winsome. And he said the whole room was just nodding and like eating it up. Mm-hmm. And this was seconds ago, the most, you know, progressive view of we need to create a super safe space for every type of, you know, wherever you are on the gender spectrum and all of this. And he kind of went the opposite ways, is we need to prepare kids to be tough,
mm-hmm.
and to be able to like have resolve. And it turned the room. They were all like, yeah, we agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But he did it in a way that I think was helpful. And I think that's part of the motivation to want to, you know, like you mentioned, salt and light. I think that's a good thing. I do understand one of the things we're wrestling with is it seems like a week doesn't go by and you hear about another school shooting.
Yep.
And so, you know, there are certain things that are completely out of your control. That's a scary thing.
Yes.
And at the same time, you know, the most recent one happened in a private school.
Yep.
And I think there are certain things like that where it's easy to get to live in paralysis and not wanting your kids to ever leave the home. You know, growing up, it was stranger danger. We were more worried about like a stranger at the park who's going to abduct us. Mm-hmm. But now it's a totally different, different thing that is like, man, homeschooling seems like the safest option at times. Just the fear, it's hard to not live in the fear of that.
It's, if you homeschool out of fear, I think that's something you really got to wrestle with.
Yep.
If you homeschool because this is what's best for your kids and their preparation and the situation, that's different.
Yep.
That spirit of fear is so paralyzing. And if you're homeschooling out of fear, you're probably doing other things out of fear.
Yep.
And to be fearless, to have this trust that in the hardest situations, you know, Daniel's going to still pray.
Yep.
He's not going to be afraid and stop praying, even if he ends up in a den of lions. Again, if I think back to the stories you guys have heard over and over again, one of the phrases that came out because I talked about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is even if. You know, living life, even if. They say to the king, you know what? God can save us. And we don't have to defend ourselves. But even if he doesn't, we're still not bending down.
Yeah.
How do you get kids to live life even if? How do you, as adults, even if? What if you lose your job? What if your kids get bullied? Do you still trust God through the process? So I'm older. There was a time when I can remember a lot of people at camp, a lot of adults would always talk about how sovereign God is, and you have to trust God's sovereignty.
Mm-hmm.
And I always joked that their belief in God's sovereignty ended the first time their kid got a bad coach.
Yeah.
Because then they were all up in arms because their kid wasn't playing or they were not getting this opportunity. And my question is, if God's sovereign, then that's the coach that he's using to grow your kid into something that you can't. Now, you don't let your kid be hurt. You don't let your kid be bullied.
Yeah, remember Mike's volleyball coach made him do
500
push-ups?
Yes.
In seventh grade?
Yes. Something. So you step in situations.
Yeah, there's a time to step in.
But you also got to let God work in ways that only God can. He chose to have the Israelites wander for 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, there are these times and we want to escape hardship. We're all wired that way. But when I hear questions like this, to me, it always comes back to fear. Are we making decisions out of fear? Or are we making decisions because we believe God and trust God? Mm-hmm. And God says, this is the way, walk in it. And for some families, it is homeschooling. For some families, it is a private school. For some families, it is a public school.
Yep.
Some families may not have the skills to counter stuff. If you're a brand new believer, you probably don't know enough yet. And so you may say, you know what, I need to help my kids learn more or faster. Or each situation's different. But that's one of my personal tests and things. If I'm operating out of fear, then I'm not trusting.
Yeah.
And so to be fearless, to trust God in those situations, that to me is at the basis of so many of these big decisions, whether it's a job change, whether it's, you know, a move, whether it's, you know, a career, education. Be fearless, be strong and courageous. God is far more able to take care of us and provide those situations than we can ourselves.
That's good. It's all good stuff. Something you said made me think of Pierce came home from school the other day and I could tell he's upset. And I said, what's going on, bud? And he said, my friends were really annoyed with me today. And I said, why? And he said, well, you know, I kept getting all the questions right on the test. And they kept saying to me, Pierce, stop bragging. And I said, were you bragging? He says, no, I didn't say anything. I go, well, why are they upset? He's like, well, I kept dabbing every time I got a question right. So he's, you know, doing the dab on them. And it's just a funny, like, seven-year-old is getting his feelings hurt because they're telling him to stop bragging. But I'm also kind of like, this is why people need to be in social situations.
Yes.
To learn that their behavior is going to bother other people. And I just think about, like, I'm grateful that we've been able to socialize and get our kids in, whether it's early on in preschool and getting together with their cousins. Mm-hmm. Just there's something about the stuff you learn in social environments. And look, I know some homeschool kids, families who their kids are the brilliant and their education is probably superior and they're well adjusted. But I do think that there is certainly a danger where if your kids aren't socially in environments, and so it's one of those things. I think there is some things to consider there. And but overall, I think it's a great question. And I think
you said something there that's fun. I think there's a great value in recess.
Yeah.
And especially, and I would say this, there is a great value in secular recess.
Yeah.
You're going to meet kids who want to get in a fight. You're going to meet kids who cuss and swear at you. You're going to meet kids who pick you last. You're going to have an argument, and you have to develop the skills to negotiate and engage. And I think there's so many dynamics that happen at recess that we don't even think about. And if you're going to be salt and light, you got to be able to survive at recess.
That's a great point. I remember Zach and I in recess in grade school, we would always want to play. All the cool kids played the football game. Mm-hmm. We wanted to play, but neither Zach or I was very athletic at the time, and we weren't very good wide receivers. And I remember we always wanted to be on Tyler Persevich's team because he was the best quarterback. So we formed an identity as the Rush Brothers, and all we would do is blitz. Mm-hmm. And then we would block for the quarterback because nobody else would block for the quarterback. And our team was like, would never lose. Mm-hmm. But like, so far, I haven't thought about that in years, but like, I just think about like having to adjust the social dynamics of wanting to be in the football game. We had to carve out our niche.
Yeah.
And we did.
And you used that same identity or same problem solving process all the way through college. You and Zach would do stuff together. Yep. You do ministry together. You do trips together. You
sure.
And it just, the environment changed, but those are lessons you learn there. And I think that you look at COVID right now and kids didn't have recess for 2 years.
Sure.
They don't know how to get along. They don't know how to negotiate. I would be hate to teach third or fourth or fifth grade right now, because I think recess is where you have this social field and you learn to interact in ways that you take with you the rest of your life.
That's great. Yeah, no, I think that's a really valid observation. Well, great. I think we got a whole episode out of that question. Let's transition here. All right. Another question that was sent in. This is an anonymous email, but it came in. The question was, what are your takes on celebrating Christmas by incorporating Santa Claus, or celebrating Halloween, or doing an egg hunt on Easter with the Easter Bunny theme? How do you go about making those decisions and giving grace to those who differ?
This one's really funny for me. Personal story. When I was in kindergarten, my parents got a call that I was making all the other kindergartners cry because I had convinced them that Santa Claus wasn't real. I was amazing. Telling everybody, and she called my mom and said, would you please tell Dean to stop telling kids that Santa Claus isn't real? But he's not, but it's making everybody, it was the crisis and chaos That's in kindergarten. Hilarious. So I grew up in a family, we didn't do Santa Claus. We didn't do it. It took away from Christmas. That was my experience growing up. And it's, I don't know if you ever realized, when we got together with mom's side of the family and Santa Claus would always knock on the door, I never dressed up as Santa Claus.
Yes.
I let the kids be part of it.
Yep.
But when there was something to me, I just can't do that. But yeah, let's have our kids have fun and celebrate. And so I come from the perspective back then where, we don't do that. But then I had to raise my own kids and decide what did we want to do.
Yeah.
One of the big questions I've always wrestled with are, what are the big issues you want to take a stand on?
Yep.
And where do you waste a ton of your energy?
Sure.
I was a public school teacher. I did not want to be seen as the Grinch. I wanted to be able to talk about Christmas.
Yep.
I would never say happy holidays when I was a public school teacher. I always told kids Merry Christmas. Yep. And so if for the non-believer to have a Merry Christmas was a positive, engaging thing, and if part of that was Santa Claus,
sure,
great. I want you to be thinking about Christmas, right, because I might have a chance sometime to tell you
Christmas is not the hill to die on. It's a
yep.
choosing the battles that are probably the more important ones.
And it allows us to celebrate things.
Yep.
It allows us to have in our kids a sense of wonder. I think that's one of the things with technology. You can see anything now. You can see a volcano explode. You can see a close-up of the moon. 20 years ago, you had to take your kids to the mountains to really see the mountains. Now somebody's got it on a camera on their head, and they're hiking the mountains. And so one of the things I think we have to work harder today is to give our children a sense of wonder and awe.
Yeah.
Can we find a place where they see the stars and there's no other light around? Can we see, and when a child's two, one of the places that they experience wonder is when Santa Claus shows up and here's a present and it's for them. And so I didn't get bent out of shape because my own stuff, dressing up as Santa Claus, was just something I couldn't bring myself to do. But you guys were all a part of that.
That
celebration. We do an Easter egg hunt for all our grandkids.
Yep.
It's amazing to me how kids can find 80 Easter eggs in 3 minutes and get them all in a basket, but they can't pick up Legos in 2 hours.
Finding their shoes before school in the morning is an impossible task.
So we'll do Easter eggs. We don't really do the Easter bunny thing. I just think that's a really weird one, but I don't have a problem with it.
Yep.
But again, in my mind, it gives us a chance to talk about what Easter really is. Well,
I even think about Halloween. I remember growing up, I was told that Halloween was Satan's birthday. And that same person told me that Santa was just Satan scrambling his letters around. But what other holiday do we open our doors and show hospitality to our neighbors? Yes. I legitimately, I think that of all the holidays, I get to know people who live on my street, and I get to engage with them, and they get to show an act of hospitality.
Absolutely.
And give food. It's such a unique holiday and practice that, we don't really get into the whole ghouls and creepy clown masks and all that. But and it is a little bit stranger danger. You're walking down the street with some really interesting characters out on Halloween. So you got to be careful. But I think it's a cool way to really engage with your neighborhood in a culture that really likes to keep their doors closed.
And again, these are those things where we can't pass judgment.
Yep.
But you hit it on the head. This is your chance to be salt and light in your neighborhood.
Right.
I know a lot of churches now do trunk or treat.
Yep.
And you pull everybody out of the neighborhood.
It's true.
With the advent of automatic garage door openers.
Yeah, interesting.
The connection of people completely changed because you didn't even have to get out of your car. You can get in your car, open your garage, leave. You don't have to leave your car. You come back home. Before then, at least you had to park your car, open your garage, and you might see your neighbor. You might talk. But now people do not have to connect with their neighbors.
That is really interesting. That's one of my observations. Growing up, when somebody knocked on the door, you answered the door.
Yeah.
Nowadays, we have cameras. We're like, who is it? Is it a solicitor? Is it someone trying to sell us new windows? Mm-hmm. We may, Betsy and I, there are times where we've hid so that they don't see us in the house, or we don't want to have a long conversation with Mormons today. Mm-hmm. I've had those conversations, but there are just some days Yep. Where it's a weird, almost like a answering front door anxiety that didn't used to exist. And I just wonder if the changing of our becoming more isolated from our neighbors is something that maybe could be a distinction for or a challenge for Christians to show more hospitality, to be more open. I know of a friend who will host a weekly neighborhood and just invite their neighbors yep. to a barbecue. And like doing stuff like that, I think could be a great witness in a culture that is so closed off. Cause I think people crave that. They want to know their neighbors. They're maybe just too socially anxious.
We like to get in safe spaces with people we know and we're yep. comfortable with. If you're going to welcome people, you're going to be uncomfortable at sure. times.
There's a risk.
If you're going to invite people in, they're going to wear muddy shoes. They're mm-hmm. going to curse in front of your kids. They may have different views. Or are we, and that's something we want, always want to be, are we a place yep. that welcomes? Are we a place where people feel comfortable coming into our homes? I think that is the key to breaking down a lot of the barriers we yep. find in the world, is inviting people into your space, even if it makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And Halloween does that. Halloween's yeah. one of those, there's not a lot of times when your whole neighborhood's out and about.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that's, and again, it's, Paul says it'll be all things to all people, mm-hmm. the further the gospel. You're right. We're not dressing you up as a demon or as a witch.
Sure.
You dress up as a football player or a cowboy or yep. a box or something. I don't know yep. what everything you guys did, but. Yep. That was a place to be part time to be part of the community and invite people.
I think that's that. You and Mom practiced this basically every Thanksgiving. We would have at least 3 or 4 basketball players joining us. And now there is a part of me that always feels a little bit of, I wish it was just the family, but I always feel by the end of the time together, I'm like, I think this was such a blessing to that person mm-hmm. to be a part of a family gathering mm-hmm. and a witness that it's like, it's worth it. It's, mm-hmm. it may be more uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It may mean, you know, it's not the most relaxing like it would be when it's just the family, but there's something powerful to that. And it's, I think it's overall a really good thing.
Hey, thanks for tuning into the Better Questions podcast. This is the end of part one of my conversation with Dean Jaderston. Next week, we'll drop part two. We wrestle with 2 more questions, so we hope you tune back in. Again, you can ask questions at betterquestions@eastminster.org. We'd love to hear more questions, and we hope you tune in next week. Thanks. Grace and peace.